is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. It's our voicemail number, toll-free nationwide. Second episode, at least, and it seems like in a row, where we've had to talk about, or at least where something has been going on worldwide involving religious terrorism.
Boy.
Yeah. So just over 24 hours ago now, there were two or three coordinated attacks in London.
It was two, I believe.
And this comes on the heels of a major attack in
Manchester.
In Manchester, for which right now there's going on a benefit concert
right this moment
by the same artist who was performing who is
Ariana Grande.
Right.
She was a Nickelodeon kid star.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, actually, yeah. She started on Broadway before doing that.
Oh,
so
boy.
She's got kind of a...
Well, at least she's got talent.
That's about as much as I know. and the reason I know that is because you just told me.
Oh.
but it looks like it, two or three attackers who shouted, this is for Allah.
Yes. And this is for my family. This is for Islam.
And... What could we possibly say that we haven't said before about
this is bad
religious terrorism
needs to be said.
Yeah,
don't do it. Let's all just get along.
Give peace a chance. Make love, not war.
Right. I mean, I'm always. I think people are always looking for folks who do atheist media to say, you know, this is why atheism works. Because if we didn't have religion, we wouldn't have these kind of attacks. And I always find it very difficult to do that, because I don't think people, I don't think getting rid of religion is going to magically make people better. I'm an atheist, not because of human weakness, but because I think it's a better position, because I think it leads to better outcomes.
I agree with that. As much as the religious terror attacks are heartbreaking and terrible, and if we got rid of religion, we wouldn't have attacks. I don't fall for that. People will still be awful even if there's not religion.
Right.
That's not a position I'm in.
I totally agree, but it sure makes things worse.
Yes.
I think it can make things worse. I've said a few times, I haven't said it recently, that that religion is the armor that dogma wears, is that the end of religion isn't the end of dogma. And so often these
people will still believe crazy things.
Yeah.
Yes.
People will still believe crazy things. And I think, so often these religious arguments and these religious problems that we see in these attacks are basically couched arguments for social dominance, or for more rights or something like that in other parts of the world.
Right.
This is, you know, in Europe, this is definitely people seeing it as a cultural war. And
yeah,
you can take a
it's the war against the Western culture.
Right. And if you take away the religious part, does that make the culture thing go away as well? I don't think so.
No, but it would definitely weaken their arguments a lot.
Yes.
I don't know. You see, I don't know that it would weaken their argument. I think it would change the nature of it.
It would definitely change the dynamic, sure.
Yeah.
But, I mean,
You see, the mechanism...
Just really getting people to mix, that's the important part.
Right.
Getting people to know their neighbors, that would be...
But the mechanism here is, I think, when I talk about religion and armor and dogma, I think the mechanism is that because you have this celestial hierarchy demanding that you do things a certain way, it causes us to hold on to these bad ideas for far longer than we should have. Like, why are we still talking about female genital mutilation? You know, I mean, that in light of, you know, 200 or 300 centuries of modern medicine. Why are we, you know, why is a woman having control over her own body still a choice? Why
aren't we talking about male genital mutilation?
Right. I was about to go exactly there, but I had to scratch my nose.
Because it's the norm for our society, but not for theirs.
Yeah, I know we're a little bit divided on that one. But that's a conversation I've never really wanted to have on the show. I guess it's I don't have a strong opinion.
Well, I just don't think you should take a knife to something that doesn't need cutting.
Yeah. Fair enough. But to go back to it, if you take away the religious arguments, you still have differing cultures.
Sure.
You know,
but differing cultures, I mean, really, you just need to play. Let's all play, get to know our neighbor. And
right.
Most things would disappear.
Yeah, but that would require people to have open minds about other people, and you're never going to really get there easily.
Yeah.
You know, there's the whole thing about, like, having some old person that doesn't like gay people, then you just, like, introduce them to a quote-unquote person, because everybody's a person, and they're like, oh, you know, that's a nice person. And then you're like, hey, that person you just met, they're gay.
But this...
And they're like, oh, well, I didn't really know that.
So the way religion plays here is the people who believe as you do, who subscribe to the same celestial hierarchy, are better, and they are the people you should consort with. All others are infidels.
Sure, in group after.
And you get that. And that makes a certain amount of sense. But, I mean, that doesn't mean that people who are atheists automatically go out and talk to a whole bunch of other people and are immediately more accepting. I mean, if you look at my world, for example, I don't talk to a lot of people who are religious these days, because I just don't go out and socialize very much. And the people who I see on a day-to-day basis are generally people who work with me on various projects or work with me on the show. So as a result, my world looks a lot more atheist than the world truly is.
Sure, but we also are more accepting of people in general.
I would like to think so.
We don't have a dogma telling us to be, you know, for these people over here and against these people over there.
Yeah.
So
I'm not saying that this problem would look exactly the same if we didn't have religion. I'm just saying I don't think getting rid of religion is the total solution to this problem.
It definitely wouldn't look much different.
Yeah. And there's one thing that I really hate. Which is, I don't know if you've seen it a couple times, but it's a picture of somebody dressed up as an Islamic jihadist with a gun holding a Quran, and then, oh, it's a woman, and then it's a Christian woman holding a Bible.
Oh,
and
yes.
A,
oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
I've
a gun.
Seen that one, yeah. With the American flag.
Yeah, with the American flag and the jihadi flag or whatever.
And holding an M16.
Right. Yeah. And it's
then,
like...
Then they show an atheist.
Isn't
one?
It? No, they don't... Well, the canonical meme... doesn't have like, there's no atheist version of this picture, or when they bring in the atheist picture, it's like a telescope and a
the one I see is those two that you just mentioned.
Yeah,
the atheist is just drinking a microbrew.
Yeah. And I
has the periodic of table of elements behind it.
I want to get a picture of me holding a gun in like the Kernergan and Ritchie Sea handbook, just so that we can jump over this stupid speed bump and get on with our lives, because if this is the standard by what makes your particular subculture better than other people's, you suck pretty hard. Like, because that's a fairly low standard to leap over.
That's a real low standard.
Yeah.
The entire Sagan collection on VHS.
Yeah. Well, you know, you can just tell me to introduce you. It's one of the...
We know who we are.
Yeah, you know.
No one else needs to know.
How are you, Meredith?
I am doing great, Sam.
And you, Wes?
I'm doing lovely. Thank you very much.
I'm just a little, you know, a little put off by what you're seeing in the media. So three attackers wearing fake suicide bomb vests drove a van into pedestrians on the London Bridge, or rather the London Tower Bridge, because I thought the London Bridge was in Lake Havasu.
Yes. They flew it over brick by brick.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
Does that make sense?
So fancy.
Then they attack people with long knives in the Borough Market. There's so far 7 fatalities with 8 injured, 21 critically. We told you with the kind of stuff they were shouting. And that's the attacks. And then there's the response to the attacks, which in the era of our wonderful politics is in some ways just as troubling. Well, except with the deaths, I suppose.
Well, you had the bobbies, you had the British police. They fired a little over 50 rounds.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a big deal, because British police aren't even armed with firearms.
Yeah, right. They called this unprecedented because they fired 50 rounds.
Because they fired a gun at all.
Yeah.
Really.
But the fact that they fired as many as 50 is new.
Well, and the response time here was very quick as well.
Right.
In comparison with other terror attacks, I think they were looking at a response time of 8 minutes from when the first 911 call came in, or British equivalent to 911.
Yeah.
Which is very fast.
It's pretty, yeah, it's pretty good. It's unprecedented, but this isn't, when I said, like, negative responses, I don't think having to shoot a lot of bombs or a lot of bullets at people who are wearing bomb vests.
I'm going for the positive responses because you had a lot of British people that were over there in the general area that were, you know, throwing chairs, throwing bottles of beer at these attackers. And
actually, yeah, you were telling me before in pre-show.
The one gentleman.
That makes me feel wonderful, first of all. Second, there was some guy, one of our friends that lives over there, said that there was a guy running with while holding a beer.
Yeah.
I don't know if he was running towards the attackers or away from him. I don't care. I bet he didn't spill a drop, and good on you, sir.
Yeah, that is definitely a method. Not dropping your beer is definitely a method of counterterrorism.
Yeah.
But you've got Theresa May saying that they need to review the counterterrorism laws, which
crack down on internet security.
Exactly. Not even just reviews the security that they have now, but she wants to basically patrol all the internet,
right?
Because terror.
It's a thing that happens in legislative cultures like ours,
yes.
Which is when bad things happen,
make laws to stop them.
Yeah, sometimes it's not the laws are bad or the laws don't adequately cover it. It's that the resources weren't in the right place. You know, the intelligence wasn't, but, you know, all the tools are available, but they weren't in the right place. But that it can be that way sometimes. However, because a legislator has nothing else to do in these circumstances, their response is to just suddenly invent a whole bunch of new laws so it can look like that they're doing something effective to the body politic, when really, in reality, they should just get out of the way and let professionals do their job.
I mean, come on. When bad things happen, that's how we get stuff like the Patriot Act.
Precisely.
So, yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
they need to take a step back, take a breath.
But when you have an authoritarian stance in your platform, as Theresa May does, you're going to look on, I'm loath to say this, in, you know, so soon after an attack, but in some ways, you're going to see it as an opportunity to get to get some ideas across.
Yes. Yeah.
Speaking of which, Khan issued a post-attack statement. Metropolitan Police are responding to the horrific terrorist attack at London Bridge and Borough Market. My thoughts are with everyone affected, and I'd like to thank the brave men and women of our emergency services who were first on the scene and will be working throughout the night. This was a deliberate and cowardly attack on innocent Londoners and visitors to our city enjoying their Saturday night. I condemn it in the strongest possible terms. There is no justification whatever for such barbaric acts. And it also include a warning not to be alarmed to increase police presence in the city. And so our president, who did speak with Prime Minister May and said, you know, hey, we're allies, so we're ready to help out, but misread it and thought that Mayor Sadiq Khan was saying, don't be alarmed by increased terrorism. Trump tweets at least seven dead and 48 wounded in terror attack, and Mayor of London says there's no reason to be alarmed.
Well, it was the other side is what we talked about earlier. Is it was short lived? It was alarming for 8 minutes, and then it was over.
No, I think you're misunderstanding here, which is kind of ironic. Actually,
oh, is that ironic?
Apparently. Yeah, because. The mayor of London said there's going to be increased police presence in the city as we go through this. Please don't be alarmed by increased police presence. Donald Trump, the president of the United States and chairman, and the commander in chief of the armed forces of the United States, the most well-armed and destructive force of humanity ever seen. Whether that destructive force is used for good or ill, you can't say, but the fact of the matter is it exists. However, I'm so good. Guy's got a lot of power behind him. And so he reads that and goes, oh, the mayor of London is saying that, you know, don't worry about terror, and then goes to Twitter and calls him and says that he's soft on terror.
Yeah, he's weak.
Because he misread what the mayor had already...
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, because it didn't come in picture form for Trump.
Well, right. So Trump can't write, and now he also can't read?
Well, apparently. but
Hashtag Covfefe.
Okay, you know...
Covfefe.
I was... Nope, I'm cutting your microphones. Yeah, sorry. That meme was old about 2 minutes after it hit. I mean,
you can turn it back on.
All right.
I'm not going to say it again.
I was debating between cutting your mic or playing an alarm sound. If you were listening to the alarm sounds, I just couldn't find one that I liked enough.
You could just cover it with air raid.
What's that?
Just cover it with air raid sound.
I didn't. You see, I was tornado thinking about sirens. Using an air raid or a tornado siren, but in the middle of a conversation about terrorism, I didn't know if it was appropriate.
Probably not. And I'm also terrified of tornadoes anyway. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, you live in a good area then.
I do now.
Yeah. but that's terrifying to me. It's terrifying to me because you've got the person in command of the nuclear arsenal of the United States just jumps in the middle of it when he misunderstands something that a mayor of a city says.
It's like par for course.
It sounds like World War III is going to begin when Trump mishears, "I'm really looking forward to meet your children." Boom, done, dead. Millions dead.
It doesn't seem unlikely, and that's what's terrifying.
Yeah. But nothing in the United States yet, so I don't think he's going to crack down any further than he's already trying to.
Well, you know, no.
Are we talking about President Trump or President Bannon?
No, it's not President Bannon. Are you kidding? Bannon's on the outs.
Yeah.
No, he is.
Really?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
We will see.
I mean, that's the thing.
Maybe he's working behind the scenes. Dun, dun, dun.
I mean, he got kind of carte blanche to run Breitbart from the White House.
Right.
So, I mean, you don't have to hear him. You just have
Do you have sources on this? Because Bannon, Bannon was who they were going for policies for moving forward. But ever since all the stuff with, you know, ever since the independent prosecutor was assigned, I don't really think he's got a lot going on right now.
Really? Because they're starting to push the Muslim ban again.
Well, they're continuing. It's not a new push. It's the same push. They're continuing.
It's still Bannon's push.
No, it's not. I mean, he started it, but it is the entire White House's push. I mean, the White House is entirely behind this. He may have gotten the ball rolling, but we're hearing about it because the court proceedings are continuing. This is still, it's still the same historical moment. This isn't a new push. It's not like a new push with the recent push for like the healthcare bill. Where it died and then they started over. This is the same push.
All right.
This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. We'll continue this conversation and talk about the Paris Climate Accords, I think, and the lack thereof when we come back.
I'm Mike Gillis.
And I'm Casey Dorn, and we want to ask you an important question.
Are you sick and tired of other panel discussion shows wasting your time droning on and on about foreign policy, economics, and human rights?
Or do you want to hear conversations about things that actually matter?
We host a podcast called Radio Versus the Martians. Every month we gather a panel of our nation's finest minds and plunge a rusty prison shank into the heart of tough questions that have an impact on the lives of real people like you.
Like, are drivers required to pull over for the Ghostbusters?
Is the United Federation of Planets actually an oppressive dictatorship run by guidance counselors?
Is Arnold Schwarzenegger secretly a genius?
And are we being mean when we laugh at movies that are so bad they're good?
So write your congressman and let them know that Radio vs. the Martians is available on iTunes, Stitcher, and on RadioVersusTheMartians.com.
Need a break from the theistic world?
Live in the Seattle area?
Like the Flying Spaghetti Monster?
Whether you're an ardent non-believer, steadfast agnostic, or marauding Pastafarian, check out the award-winning nonprofit organization Seattle Atheists.
Socialize at the Third Thursday Meetup, attend lectures, come camping, donate blood.
Connect at SeattleAtheists.org.
Seattle Atheists, we believe in you.
Allegedly, soccer is a beautiful game.
It is when you know what's going on.
That's the problem. MLS is 20 years old, and people are still shocked to hear that there's an American Soccer League.
That's why you and I are talking about it. This is a discussion of American soccer for nerds and beginners. It's a good first step if a crippling soccer addiction is something that's missing from your life.
Join the club. Celebrate the 20th anniversary of MLS by actually following the season.
Hands-Free Football. New episodes every week at handsfreefootball.com.
If you enjoy the programming we create on Ask an Atheist, please make a contribution with us. Your sponsorship keeps our show in the air and improves the quality of our broadcasts. Don't make us beg. Please go to askanatheist.tv and contribute today.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. So, that's, you know, unfortunately, the stuff happening in London isn't the only stupid thing going on this week.
Well, it ain't so.
Yeah, we can talk about Trump after his disastrous, if you ask any sane press organization, or legendary and wonderful and world-changing, if you ask Sean Spicer, trip abroad.
I'm rolling my eyes.
He came back.
Sean Spicer, the king of duck speak.
What do you mean duck speak? Oh, right.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay. That's
George Orwell.
Yeah, okay. 1984. Get it. Jeez.
Just putting the rest out there for other people to look up.
Right. 1984, though. I don't know. It's getting a little old.
I'm just using that little tag, that little reference.
Okay. Because
everything is the best, the greatest.
And well, that's his job. I mean, it is. He's a sideshow barker. I mean,
sure.
If you saw Ari Fleischer with, I only remember the names of press guys that of briefing room guys that I hate. But like, if you look at like during the Obama administration, every time they would always like put him in the most glowing terms ever, and he wasn't that good. And
he was at least competent.
Not my argument. What I'm saying is, he wasn't 80 feet tall and defecates justice. Like that Robert Mueller guy, apparently. it is his job. But the difference is here is the psyche of the president that he serves. Spicer's got a job. Either does the job or he gets fired. And what the heck else is he going to do? It's not like anybody respects him.
I would rather be fired.
Yeah, that's you.
If it was me.
Yeah. So we backed out of the Paris Climate Accords.
Go us.
Which were, nothing like Kyoto. It was significantly less. Significantly less bad. But my favorite moment significantly less pushy. I guess it was about the least we could do for climate.
Yeah.
And that's not enough.
Well, no, it's not enough, but it's still better than nothing.
And now you've got the dueling banjos of the UN ambassador, saying that Trump believes that climate is changing, and EPA Director Pruitt I don't know what you're talking about when asked the same question. Which I think is very interesting.
That is interesting.
Well, it's in EPA Pruitt's best interest to say that climate change doesn't happen because he's got all that money invested into, what is it, oil?
He was the former director of Exxon. Yeah. Or no, that wasn't Pruitt. I forget who Pruitt is. I don't know.
But, his whole portfolio and all the business that he's done up until now has been in a field that is definitely not friendly to climate change.
Right. It's Tillerson who was the former Exxon.
Yeah, yes,
yeah, not
was.
Pruitt. Right. But now you've got two different aspects of the government, of this administration, saying
same
different things about climate change.
Two different things.
I mean, Trump's just like anti-climate change because conspiracy theory X, whatever that is. But Pruitt's in it for the money.
Right. Well, Pruitt is definitely in it for the money. Tillerson is definitely in it for the money.
Trump's probably the money by proxy.
No, I don't even think it's by proxy. I think he's just in it for the money.
I think what Trump does almost always is for the money, but I think he loves a good conspiracy theory.
No, I think he loves repeating a good conspiracy theory. Whether or not he actually cares about it is another thing entirely. And you can have him just saying stuff that he doesn't believe without actually having to ascribe to him any sort of like arch enemy intellect or anything like that.
I'm not saying he's smart.
Right. No, I know. But you are going to follow up by saying, I'm saying he's some sort of criminal mastermind. That's not what I mean.
God, I would think of the mental midget that would have to be his. The guy that goes against Trump if Trump
well,
is
thanks
the- not
jerk
<you. laughs>
No, it's all of us. Hey, hello.
I mean yeah, we did vote him in. What does that say about us as a nation?
Well, and then the other thing is, but the highlight of this were two things. So he backs out of the Paris Climate Treaty. And he's like, we don't need it. We can get a better deal. And the Weather Channel wasn't having it.
Oh, and I loved this.
Yeah. Well, why don't you go ahead and describe it then?
The Weather Channel on their homepage, the day that he was supposed to announce that they were backing out. Oh, I don't have it.
Okay.
Picture. But their leading story on the homepage of their site was about Trump backing out of the climate change accord.
Yeah.
And the following news stories under it, there's like eight tiles of news stories.
Here is why CO2 matters.
Yeah.
Here is proof of global warming.
Yep. Here's more proof. And here's California falling off into the ocean. And it was quite sassy.
It was pretty great. It was pretty good. And then the other one is the big seller line. The big attention getter, the soundbite of Trump's anti-Paris Accord speech was I was voted in to represent Pittsburgh, not Paris.
Oh, yeah.
And then Pittsburgh comes back and says, no, we're sticking with the treaty. You don't represent us. The mayor of Paris specifically, the mayor of Pittsburgh specifically. And then, I mean, if you want to look at the numbers, no, Pittsburgh did not vote for this guy.
Yeah. Good job, Pittsburgh.
So a list of things that Trump hates apparently includes mayors.
Yeah, this actually seems to be a trend.
Yeah, he just doesn't get along with mayors. He's had a couple run-ins with the mayor of Seattle, for good or for ill. He's had now run-ins with the mayor of London, the mayor of Pittsburgh. He just doesn't. He did fight with like Ed Koch like in New York. Government. He just doesn't like mayors.
He doesn't like the local government. He wants everyone to be under his control.
Well, that's interesting because he doesn't like. So he believes in small and effective government on the federal side, and he just sort of seems to have it out for mayors. I don't know where that goes because I could say, oh yeah, he's an anarchist, but no.
No, he just wants all power in his hand.
Right.
He's a businessman.
The best businessman.
A Portland MAX train passenger was arrested for assault after punching and shoving the conductor who'd asked him to cease yelling on the train. At a stop, the train operator entered the passenger car to ask Stephen Caldwell, who had been screaming about First Amendment rights, to leave the car for causing a disturbance. Caldwell then allegedly attacked the conductor, either by punching or shoving him to the ground. Several passengers, which reportedly included high school students traveling for a field trip, scared off Caldwell before he was found and arrested. They also assisted the conductor, who was not seriously injured. Go students.
Good job, kids.
This is not the same guy that stabbed people.
No.
I got a story about him later down. Yeah, this is a new one.
But seems to be following a lot of the same ideology as the first guy, or at least a little. I know he was yelling about his right to free speech and how free speech must be protected. So it definitely sounds like it's that same right-wing ideology.
So let's
bring that other story in.
All right.
The man who stabbed three commuters on a Portland train was arraigned in Multnomah County Court last week for murder charges. Jeremy Joseph Christian, who killed two and severely injured one man who challenged him over his anti-Muslim rant on the first day of Ramadan, shouted "Death to the enemies of America" during his court appearance. He also seemingly threatened those who opposed him by yelling "Free speech or die" and "You got no safe place." Despite federal authorities having not decided whether to charge Christian with terrorism, Christian asserted that what some people call terrorism, he calls patriotism.
Isn't that essentially him admitting that he's a terrorist?
In some people's eyes, yeah.
Yeah.
And when he was shouting this stuff in the courtroom, he was looking at the families, at the people in the court. I mean,
yeah.
he's trying to terrorize those people even more.
Yeah. He's trying to intimidate them.
Yeah.
And that alone, I mean, might constitute a separate crime, but it happened in a courtroom, so I don't know how that works.
That's kind of like churches for Highlanders.
It goes back to what we said, you know, to what people keep saying and what we keep saying on the show, which is, this is the Pacific Northwest. Everybody views the Pacific Northwest as a liberal paradise or whatever, and it's not.
You have nice liberal bastions, little areas, enclaves. But
you have the same city. You have the same rural-urban divide and the same rural-urban understandings that you have anywhere else. It's just the vibe is slightly different here. But the values don't change that much. A conservative in, I don't know, Graham doesn't look too different to me than a conservative in Phoenix.
I'll agree. We just have large swaths of conservative people all around us.
And then the other thing is that there's always been sort of this history, I'm learning, of white nationalism specifically in Oregon.
In Oregon, a little bit in Idaho and Montana as well. I think that's what makes us different, is because Portland was originally established as kind of, it was supposed to be the white haven of the West.
Hmm.
Yes.
Well, how?
Maybe not Portland. I don't. Oh,
okay.
I'm confused again.
Okay.
People migrated to Oregon to build a white bastion of the West. I'm not sure if it was Portland exactly, but
specifically to that part of Oregon.
Okay. It seems like a lot of people during that time were coming out here to escape that and establish their own little utopias, which, in some way or another, that ideology has stuck around.
Right. I also know that in the 20th century, there were a lot of terrorists, what would now be called terrorist white nationalists in the Midwest, in Wisconsin and Illinois, who attacked some people, their leaders got arrested, and the rest of them moved to Oregon.
Right.
So you do have a lot of the remnants of those white nationalist movements who relocated out here from, so you got ours, sorry.
And yeah, up here in Washington, we're Seattle, Tacoma, we have a set of mountains to the west and to the east of us, and that's a generally decent, more liberal area.
Yeah.
But yes, if you go on, you know, past the mountains on either side, it gets pretty red pretty quick, and Oregon is kind of the same. I mean,
well, but that's really outside of Portland.
Yeah.
It turns red real quick.
Activists are holding simultaneous rallies in Portland as we speak. The pro-Trump Patriot Prayer Rally was organized as a free speech rally meant to bring back strength and courage to those who believe in freedom, and features Kyle Chapman, a right-wing nationalist who was arrested for battery charges during a Berkeley, California protest. A counter-rally called Mobilize Labor, Fascists Out of Portland, is taking place, as well as a Portland Stands for United Against Hate solidarity demonstration at City Hall, and a No Nazis in Our Streets rally. Extra police are out in force, as well as federal protective service officers, since the location of the Patriot Prayer Rally is federally owned.
I should note that Kyle Chapman, I don't know if you're familiar with him, listeners, but that is based Stickman. He's the one that went out with a table as a shield, painted kind of like Captain America's.
Okay.
He had a stick, he had a helmet on, and he was whacking people.
It's a little confusing for me because he's Chapman Stickman. And the Chapman stick is an instrument often used by the band King Crimson.
Right. Well,
and,
this one is called,
this is not that.
Yeah, I don't think so.
This one is based Stickman.
Okay.
Based being that he gives zero cares.
I think I've heard that before. Can you explain that?
I just did.
That's it? That's really all it is to it? He gives no cares?
Yeah. He doesn't care what people think.
Yes, he does.
Well, he doesn't care what liberals think. He would rather beat them.
No, he cares what liberals think.
Yeah.
Come on.
Or else why would he want to beat them if he didn't really care? I don't want to beat people I don't care about.
But still, I mean, that's
right.
He got named by other people based Stickman, starting on 4chan and other places, and that stuck. And yeah.
But this idea that that internet crusaders that now are being violent in real life, where they don't, I don't care what anybody thinks about me. That is not true.
Sure.
If that was, if that were actually true, they wouldn't be capitalizing on this fame. They would just be doing whatever it is that they do. Leaving people alone.
Still, correct. This is the quality of their speakers is some little internet meme guy that beat another dude over the head with a frickin' stick.
Right.
Boy.
So what? Yeah. No, I mean, this is the best you have to offer.
Yeah, yeah. Agree, completely lame.
Yeah.
It gets better, though.
Does it?
And by better, I mean kind of worse.
Okay.
Talking about the, who's the other group that's going to...
Oath Keepers.
The Oath Keepers.
Oh, I love those guys.
Yeah.
I believe I called them terrorists last week.
They're coming from California and Montana and Washington.
Granted, the way I understand it, some or all of the leadership of the Oath Keepers don't want to be involved in this.
Right.
But there's still many, many that are going and are being... Somebody's trying to organize them.
It's the local leadership that's actually dropped out. The Oregon chapter heads. There's two persons of contact, regional chapter heads. Mm-hmm. And they both dropped out of providing the security. They don't want to lead this. One of the guys, I think it was because he was afraid for his men that he would be taking, that they would receive violence. And the other guy was scared for himself. It's actually the president of Oath Keepers.
So one of the things
national.
That annoys me the most about this is that people have bought in whole hog, especially on the left, that these people are free speech demonstrators.
That's what they claim they
who
are.
Who cares what they call themselves? Hang on a minute.
I'm on the same page with you, Sam. I promise I am.
All right. But I don't care what they call themselves. I don't. But we're buying into it, and specifically the left is buying into it whole hog, saying that free speech is now something that we have to fight against. Literally people are saying, well, we're fighting against these free speech people. They don't want free speech. They don't want me to talk. They wouldn't listen to this. They would fight against this. They would specifically want us not on the air. The people who are now fighting for free speech are the same people who want a Christian government. They don't want free speech. They're dominionists.
They want their free speech.
Right. I mean,
which isn't necessarily free speech. It's hate speech in most cases.
Which is why they Which is why they're talking about a prayer rally. You know, they're not talking about, they're calling it a free speech demonstration, but it's also a prayer rally. And they see it as a war of Christianity against Islam. They see this as a war of ideology.
Oh, yeah. That's the other thing coming up, too, is that this is actually spilling from Portland into Seattle a little bit. The Oath Keepers are going to be at the anti-Sharia law rally in Seattle.
The anti-Sharia law rally is pretty awesome because for reasons that I'll hang on a sec. I'll start that over. The anti-Sharia law rally is pretty great because they didn't feel safe. So the snowflakes had to come up to Seattle. Is how that worked out.
Yeah, because it was going to be in Portland as well.
This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. We're going to go to the break. When we come back, Dan will be joining us to discuss, a story that's been going around social media lately about a seed bank in Northern Europe.
Hasn't God We Trust invaded your town? Are you tired of government officials who want to plaster "In God We Trust" on taxpayer-owned property? Are you afraid because your local sheriff placed an "In God We Trust" decal on the patrol cars? We are here to help. The original motto project is for those who feel the separation of church and state is an important issue and should be honored regardless of your belief or lack thereof. Theists, non-theists, and all free thinkers are welcome. We need your support to show politicians that diversity exists within our nation, and their promotion of a monotheistic religion and push for theocracy will not be tolerated. Stand up and be heard. Join us at originalmotto.us.
My name is Jonathan Ariola of TDTF Pod. The more voices you hear, the more we observe and feel, the more we learn about the other facets of this complex and wondrous beast that is humanism and free thought. Join me on the science-loving journey through topics like justice, murder, family, diligence, taste, history, society, race, boob jobs, law, addiction, video games, fear, sacrifice, children. Wait a minute, not sacrificing children. That's not what I meant. Bring the popcorn and watch me break down the issues too deep, too fast. Join me at TDTF Pod. I'm Jonathan Ariola. Talk to you soon.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. And a little bit of a mix-up. Joining me in the studio is Jeremy. How
are
you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Fantastic. And Dan?
Just happy to be here, Sam.
Hey, you know, it's been a while since we've had you on. A little bit of momentous news, I should say.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we bought a house.
That's, yeah. And not only that, but...
But in Tacoma.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You have joined the conspiracy.
That's right. We have moved to the dark side. Technically the lighter side, since it was a move south in the northern hemisphere.
Oh, yeah.
Our days have been lengthened by 0.01 seconds or something like that.
A global seed vault in Norway's Arctic, meant to protect the world's agriculture supply from natural disasters and nuclear war, was partially flooded due to melting permafrost. The Arctic has recorded record high temperatures, pushing the permafrost beyond its melting point. Water reportedly seeped into the entryway of the mountain-embedded vault, which is equipped with pumps and water abatement measures. None of the million-odd species seed packets were harmed, as they are stored in the vault's deep interior at sub-zero temperatures.
So, the story was sort of latched onto by the media and kind of largely overblown. The seeds themselves were never in any danger. And In fact, there's pretty much, well, I don't want to say zero, but there's nearly zero chance that water could ever actually get into the part of the vault where the seeds are.
Okay.
So, I guess a little background. The seeds were first stored in this area in 1984 by the Nordic Gene Bank, which was just a Norway organization, just the country of Norway. Mm-hmm. They started putting them in there. It's an abandoned coal mine, and they chose the location because it's very far north, so cold temperatures were pretty stable in 1984. It's in sandstone, and it's about 130 meters above sea level. Okay. So even in like the event of a tsunami, you know, any of that, it's just not likely that water is ever going to reach that high.
Right.
And surrounded by permafrost, which sort of by definition is permanently frozen ground. In 2008, NordGen kind of took over, and that's more of a, it is a, still a government organization, but sort of more of an international cooperation. And they started taking seeds from other countries around the world. It was never really intended to be like this doomsday vault that it's sort of listed as in the news that like, okay. Oh, the doomsday seed vault. We're all doomed if we don't get that. No, it's just a seed bank. It's a big seed bank that, you know, holds seeds from a lot of different countries, but still it's effectively a very large safe deposit box.
Okay.
It's not the only source of any of these seeds. In fact, they don't have any seeds that are only found in their seed bank.
Right.
If a country gives them seeds, they are copies of what that country has in their own seed bank. So it's just sort of like, you know, if we have an economic collapse or a natural disaster or something that wipes out our seed bank, then we can withdraw these seeds from our safe deposit box in the seed vault in Norway.
Well,
this actually had to happen recently. The Syrian civil war caused the seed bank of Syria, which was formerly in Aleppo, which is not doing so well right now, to have to relocate. And some of their seeds were lost and destroyed in transfer. So they had to make the first actual withdrawal from the seed bank in quite some time.
Sounds almost like a library as opposed to a safety deposit box.
Kind of. Each country only has access to the seeds that they deposited.
Oh, yeah?
So it's sort of like each country has their own safe deposit box. There is no fee for using it. It's all maintained by the Norwegian government. And you cannot have access to any other country's seeds. They can't have access to yours. The Norwegian government may not have access to your seeds. They are your seeds. They're just stored in Norway.
Thank goodness.
Right.
So it's not... It was... So clearly, a doomsday protection device was not its primary purpose.
No.
Was it considered a secondary purpose, or is that just media hype suggesting?
That's really just media hype. It's the backup of a backup.
Okay.
It's the tertiary system, if you will.
So it's sort of like bananas. So in the case of Aleppo, where the Syrian seed bank was, they can make withdrawals from it.
Right.
But... not just economic collapse, but if there's like a new mite or a new infestation that takes out an economic crop, you've got a genetic backup.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, and genetic backup beyond the seed bank of whatever country that deposited them in the first place.
So much like the internet, which everybody seems to think was designed to protect, to exist after a nuclear war, which it really wasn't.
No, I don't really see a power grid existing after a nuclear war.
Well, it was not like a limited nuclear war is the idea.
Oh, okay.
That was the design. People think that was the design idea, and it never really was. It's this all over again. It's not a doomsday.
Yeah, kind of. So what happened with the water? Starting last October, the temperatures in the Arctic were ridiculously high, about 7 degrees Celsius higher than what is normal.
Right.
And in some places, including Svalbard, the archipelago where the island of Spitsbergen and the seed bank itself is.
Oh, it's up at Svalbard?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, I actually know where that is.
Where it's actually located. Is about 800 miles north of the Arctic Circle and about another 800 miles from the North Pole itself. The town nearby, which, oh man, I'm going to totally mispronounce it, but it's like Longbyearbyen or something.
Yeah, I wasn't even going to try.
The town nearby claims to be the northernmost continuously occupied human settlement.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's really how far up it is. But, climate change is real. We had a particularly warm winter. And so what happened was permafrost that is uphill on the mountain, uphill of where the entrance to the actual vault is, began to melt faster than normal.
Okay.
And, you know, really, like, the surface of the permafrost is going to be melting pretty much, you know, in the spring and summer. But you go down about 8 inches and it's solid ice year-round. Well, this year that changed. And so the water melt, you know, the runoff was significantly higher than normal. And some of it did flow into the entrance tunnel of the seed vault. But the way that the seed vault is set up, I mean, it's deep in the ground. It's an abandoned coal mine. So as you go into the seed vault, there's about a 100-meter long tunnel that's at a downhill slope as you go in. And then the direction changes and it starts going uphill.
Okay.
So for water to flow in, it would have to flow in down the 100 meters downhill, and then it would have to go uphill, then it would have to go past 3 airlock doors that are minus 18 degrees Celsius in order to actually get water to where the seeds are. So while they've decided they're going to, you know, take some precautionary measures against more water getting in, it's hardly the disaster that it's been sort of broadcast as, where it's like, oh no, water is flooding the seed vault. Well, a little bit more water than normal got in, made the entryway very slippery, and the pumps that take the water out couldn't take out quite as much as usual at that time.
So the way it's being portrayed on social media, or I haven't really read about it in the media, I've only seen it on social media, is there's two parts to this. Part one is that this is doomsday protection insurance, which it's not. The second part is that the permafrost that this installation was made in was supposed to be permafrost, and now that permafrost isn't so perma.
Right.
Is that part true?
That part is true, and okay. It is much, much more concerning. The vault itself, even if all the permafrost above it melted, it's really not likely that any of that water is going to get to the seeds.
Right.
It's still down in sandstone. The entryway is surrounded by some permafrost, but really the vault itself is in sandstone, so it's not like the whole mountain is going to melt around it. But sandstone is kind of semi-permeable, mm-hmm. and while the actual seed vaults deep at the end of the chamber are waterproof, they have plans now to waterproof the entryway tunnel and dig some drainage ditches around it, anticipating this climate change.
So the core component of this argument, which is, or the reason why this is concerning for people, is that protections that we have that were designed off of the permafrost are no longer protections because there isn't permafrost.
Right.
Got it.
Yeah. And that's a much more concerning issue. The loss of the seed bank, I mean, it would be a tragedy, but it would still be a small scale tragedy because right. these are copies. They are duplicates. It's not the only copy of any of these crops. You know, every country has their own seed banks. But the loss of the seed bank would tell us that the Arctic permafrost has melted to a tragic extent, which frankly is a much scarier thought even than losing a large body of our crop's genetic material. If the permafrost is melting, well, then things in the soil that haven't been decomposing are going to be decomposing, releasing tremendous amounts of CO2, releasing tremendous amounts of methane. And like happened earlier this year in Siberia, I believe, last year in Siberia, releasing maybe ancient diseases like anthrax that have been locked in the ground in right. some reindeer carcass.
Oh.
We did not account for the melting of permafrost in any of these sort of climate
projections.
Since
the day we named it, I would assume.
Yeah, until very recently. Mm-hmm. It, you know,
and this is the first
exactly
time
the radar.
Permafrost deterioration has gotten this far north?
I don't know if it's the first time,
okay.
but it's certainly the most significant. I mean, okay. the winter last year was the second hottest winter on record ever. But the real clincher about that was it was preceded by the first hottest, which was preceded by the first hottest, which was preceded by the first hottest.
Right.
This is the first year that we didn't set a new record for the Arctic winter, but gosh, we came close.
Yeah, which is what you expect if you look at climate change data for winter by winter temperatures, you're expecting a distribution.
Mm-hmm.
But what you're seeing, again, is a trend line up.
A rather steep trend line.
Rather steep trend line.
Yep.
So this is not the apocalyptic seed bank.
Right.
Is there an apocalyptic seed bank?
This is one of the largest and one of the like best protected as far as climate goes, seed banks.
Mm-hmm.
But again, you know, we're in this seed bank, they're storing these seeds at like minus 18 degrees Celsius. There are multiple vapor locks in place, not just the doors, but also the seeds themselves are triple wrapped and heat sealed foil. And if all of their power systems failed, it would still be weeks before it got warm enough for any of these seeds to actually, become moldy or germinate or anything like that. So it's one of the best, one of the most secure and best protected, but it's certainly not the only seed bank in the world.
That'd be some pretty sloppy planning if the apocalypse happened and then we had to go to Norway to get raspberries
right.
and then bring them back and plant them.
That is true.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's some bad sci-fi.
Although if it continues to warm, it might just sort of be a stroll through the park, It might not be the worst thing ever. Currently, the conditions around this place are, extreme cold year-round.
Right.
Minus 10 degrees Celsius is pretty much the norm in the winter, which is, not as cold as it could be, but pretty darn cold. And it's so remote that even the researchers going in and out of the facility carry rifles on their backs because getting eaten by polar bears is a real and present danger.
I knew there'd be polar bears.
Very remote area.
Because you said Svalbard.
Right.
Which in the his Dark Materials trilogy, it's the area with the fighting polar bears, the Philip Pullman series.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
All right.
You're going to have to back that up some. I have no idea what you're talking
it's
about.
It's an atheist sort of Harry Potter-esque story that was written for children. And then remember the movie?
The Golden Compass.
The Golden Compass and
okay.
the Catholic League came out really hard against...
I remember the Catholic League hating on it.
Philip Pullman, the writer of that book. It's an amazing series of books for children.
Okay.
About...
more or less killing
all
God.
All kinds of things. Yeah, killing God, jumping through dimensions, romances.
Wow.
If you haven't read it, go
300 pages of chronic bleeding from a hand. There's all it's good. It's good stuff.
It's got magic knives, armored polar bears, and killing God. What more could you possibly want?
I'm on board.
Yeah.
Okay. So we don't have a apocalyptic seed bank. The permafrost is melting, but there's a really awesome book.
Yeah.
That's a fairly Ask an Atheist tone.
Yeah, yeah. I think, you know, one of my favorite comments on this whole seed bank thing is, you know, people going, well, they didn't plan for climate change. Like, well, you know, in 1984, when they started this, that was just barely on the horizon. You know, when they chose that this was going to be Norway's location before they expanded it to other countries, before Norgen took over. They're like, yeah, this should be safe. It's in permafrost. It's cold. You know, we got all our ducks in a row here. This is the best we can do. And it kind of is. But then the criticism I'm hearing is like, well, they didn't plan for climate change. Like, well, where should we go then?
I mean, we knew about climate change.
Where do we go?
Well, Antarctica, but then that's draining up too.
Right.
So, I mean, you can plan for climate change, and climate change was the thing that they were talking about in 1984. Mm-hmm. But we didn't really get the extent of it. I mean, I remember when I was a kid and we were talking about climate change and nobody was saying a damn thing about CO2. It was all CFCs and methane.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the hole in the ozone.
Yeah, and the hole in the ozone. And it was only well after I was done with school that the leading, you know, pusher for climate change was ending up being CO2. Right. That's a recent phenomena. And, you know, and we keep seeing evidence of it with like stuff melting and chunks falling off of other chunks. But whatever, we still got to fight it.
One of my favorite little like factoids I came across while researching for this bit, all the freezer systems at the seed bank are independently powered. You know, the seed bank has its own power source, and you know that it's going to be sustainable. You know, if it's cut off from the grid or anything like that, because it's powered by locally mined coal. A primary driver of climate change.
This is Ask an Atheist, 844 Skeptic, 844-753-7842. If there's nothing I love more, it's irony.
That's one hand washing the other. Maybe it is an apocalyptic seed bank.
Yeah, possibly.
Its power source is what does us in as a people.
See you in a minute.
Forty-8 hours, 24 hours, 10 minutes to go.
The motorcade appears to have stopped, and yes, it appears as though the governor is getting out now. It's hard to see. My God, the rain is coming down in sheets. I've never seen anything like this. There must be tens of thousands of people out here right now. The streets are shut down. Okay, it appears the governor is making his way toward the convention center. No one knows what he's going to say. The crowd is pushing forward through the storm. The Secret Service is struggling to hold them back. A wave of people are rushing toward the candidate. My God.
0. For your consideration, we present Convention and its subject, the nominee, ANNEXradio.com, now on iTunes and Stitcher.
You can advertise on Ask an Atheist on the radio, on our website, and in our podcast. People just like you who have the same interests are listening right now, just like you are, and thousands will download this podcast and listen to it later. If you have a product, service, or idea to sell, people here in the Pacific Northwest and people around the world, thousands will hear your message. Let us help you sell your product, service, or idea. Contact us at advertising@askanatheist.tv. That's advertising@askanatheist.tv.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. And I feel like, not in the last segment, but the segment before, when we were talking about free speech and people fighting for free speech, I really dislike that people are just sort of accepting that these people are protesting in terms of free speech. and free speech alone, when really it's free speech attached with actual hate. And it's not like these guys are just talking.
Yes, that's the important thing.
All of the people that we're talking about right now, they're speaking, but they're also stabbing and hitting and getting arrested, and that's not speech. And this goes to the you know, I'm at a personal crossroads on this one, in that you've got people who I might otherwise agree with basically acting in ways that I would not agree with in terms of free speech and the right of people to say what's on their mind. And people who I think are hateful scumbags marching, you know, the people marching for free speech right now wouldn't give a dime to the ACLU.
Oh, no.
Ever. The people who are marching for free speech right now would never back this show. The people marching for free speech right now don't actually want free speech. Don't fall for it. Don't. Because you will throw the baby out with the bathwater. There are millions of these people. There are thousands of us. We will be thrown out with them. If you decide to just attack free speech without critically viewing what they mean by free speech.
That was excellently put.
Thank you. And that's the problem. And there's a whole bunch of stuff that I just decided that I didn't want to talk on the show, like the whole punching a Nazi business, which maybe we'll do that some other show, but it's tearing my friend. This argument right here is the center of something that feels like it's tearing my friends apart, and it's setting my friends against each other, and there isn't a whole lot of listening, and I think there isn't a whole lot of critical analysis. I will always be for free speech, and I will always be for uncomfortable free speech. I am like the ACLU, and that I will back someone who I will say that somebody who has abhorrent beliefs has a right to say them, And if we leave it there, we have the kind of world that we need. We can see the bad stuff. We can do something about it. What these free speech advocates are fighting for is not free speech. And do not assume that we mean the same things.
I totally agree with you. I will defend a person's right to say really horrible things.
Yeah.
I also say that we don't have to listen to you.
That's exactly it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
If you want to have a bunch of white supremacists spew their crappy speech, then fine. Do it. Get your permits. Do it. But I'm not going to give you any mind. I'm not going to pay you any attention.
Yeah. And there's other people asking for critical analysis of stuff like that. And I'm not going to be against it, because I think we should critically analyze everything, all things all the time. That is how democracy works.
That is how we became atheists.
Yeah. But one of the things that has enabled this critical analysis to go forward in the way that has allowed us to live in this reasonably nonviolent world that we live in now compared to history.
Yes.
Is the freedom to analyze and criticize without limitation.
Yeah.
And when you start talking about throwing that away, we're now attacking one of the very things that allowed us to get to this point, and for me to talk to you right now to begin with. And that scares me a little bit. I am beginning to be scared by my allies as well as my enemies. And I also have enemies, and that scares me too. and it's a really difficult time for right now. So if you hear a bifurcation in the way that I'm discussing the stuff that we've discussed so far today, that's why. There's a wound in my head regarding this that hasn't healed yet, that I haven't really fully integrated. I feel like you guys may have integrated it a little bit better than I have.
I'm still kind of conflicted.
Okay.
On some things.
Wes?
I wish that we didn't have to have having speeches in the first place.
Yeah.
I wish that we didn't have KKK marches, but we do. And, you know, we also have great parades too. So, you know, let's go to those and ignore the people that are destroying our country in
the one
ways.
The one thing that I can say about my political allies and the way we've been prosecuting this gradual improvement of society into a more inclusive and less and into a more inclusive and better outcomes for everybody, regardless of race, belief, gender, is I think we're sometimes ignorant of what backlash is, how it happens, and what we can do about it. I think sometimes we forget that. And that's the one thing that I will say that, that I'm pretty sure about. But I would also include myself in that group, is that there are some functions in how we got here that it's not, there's a lot of stuff I don't understand. But a lot of stuff I don't understand, I at least have some sort of like basic concept of how we got there. When we're dealing with like the backlash against against the idea of racial equality right now, there are functions to this that I do not understand at all, that I am just in, I am completely in the dark about. And that's terrifying to me.
For me, I recognize a lot of the backlash started when political correctness came started being a thing back in the 90s. That's when I remember hearing about it first.
Yeah.
And that's when I started seeing, you know, really mostly old people, generally older white males, saying that, what is all this stuff? Get off my grass kind of stuff.
Well, and they do that now, too. They just call it snowflakes.
They do it now, too. But
well, they still say political correctness. Has anybody said political correctness in the last 18 years and meant it positively?
No.
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 No. That's dead battle. That is that one died.
It didn't die. It just morphed into stuff like, well, Richard Spencer.
Well, it morphed into not a battle, is what it morphed into, which means the battle, we lost it.
Yeah.
Because the very concept of the idea that led to the phrase political correctness, which is maybe we can say things that don't, that aren't horribly insensitive and insult other human beings in going about our day.
Wow, what a novel concept.
Yeah. Gee, that's crap. Yeah, of course. Yeah. Jeez. But whatever. Yeah. I don't have one. You shouldn't expect clean solutions from us. And two, if you think there's a clean solution to this, I think you need to look harder.
Oh, definitely.
Because that there is, we do get a lot of email that I just don't mention on the show where it's like, oh, if we just did this, we just need to cut these people out. We just need to do, sometimes it goes to the point of violence.
Well, each and every single one of these, we just need to do this.
Yeah.
Comes with an entire waterfall of then this happens and then this happens, and people don't think about
the consequences of backlash.
Yeah, exactly.
Backlash, blowback, second order effects, whatever you want to call it. It's so if you're noticing, like I said, if you're noticing a split personality in me right now, that's because you're observant. And and thank you for being observant. And I don't know. I don't know where this. I have no idea where this train ends. But there are some things that are good, that are just good, and I got one of those here.
Oh boy,
lawyers. Lawmakers in Denmark have repealed an anti-blasphemy law more than three centuries old. The statute had called for up to 4 months in prison or fines. The move comes scarcely a week before a man was to be tried for blasphemy after he posted a video of himself burning a Quran on Facebook. MP Bruno Gerup, who proposed the repeal, reasoned that religion should not dictate what is allowed and what is forbidden to say publicly, and stated that the old law gave religion a totally unfair priority in society. Acts or expressions that threaten or demean protected classes of people, such as religious believers, are still considered punishable crimes.
Isn't this wonderful? I mean, this is glorious.
Yeah, this is good.
This is very good.
And it wasn't... And the great thing is that the person defending it isn't saying, well, we have to defend Christianity in Denmark, which is something a lot of people would say. He's saying all religion it has an unfair importance in speech, in society, with this three-century-old law.
There are so many ancient rules, laws on the books that need to be, you know, challenged and looked over, because something like this, just not useful in this day and age.
Right.
and can be totally used and abused against other people.
There's something interesting about this because one of the very first stories we did on Ask an Atheist 7 years ago, almost exactly 7 years ago.
Ireland?
No, was a guy in Florida burning a Quran or having a Quran burning.
Oh.
I believe that was a pastor burning a pile of them, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah. He was going to have a Quran bonfire.
Yeah. And he was, he was starting a lot of crap.
And he was starting a lot of crap. Yeah.
It was bad. I remember him.
Using it as toilet paper, et cetera, et cetera.
Oh.
Not even rolling paper. I mean,
yeah. Sure. Rolling paper's nice comparatively. Like, yeah. if I was mass producing my holy book and you were using it for rolling papers, I'd kind of consider that a minor compliment.
Yeah.
But I have different ideas on this than most people.
This is Washington State.
Yeah. Not my thing, but if it is yours, I'm glad I was able to help. And I'll say what I said before, which is he's allowed to do it. He should be allowed to do it. Yeah. I think he's a jackass. I think it's a bad idea. I think it harms the narrative. I think it harms his side. I think it makes him look bad.
But
and
it
I think
still shouldn't be illegal.
I don't think he gets what he wants out of it, but I think he should be allowed. And here we are 7 years later with basically this whole thing writ large in the United States, where now we have a lot of people saying, no, he shouldn't be allowed to do that because somebody is, it's going to offend somebody. And when I did my blasphemy talk, like years ago, 3 or 4 years ago, this was the nature of my blasphemy talk, is that we've got these blasphemy laws all over the place. We have them in places like Myanmar. We have them in places like Mauritania or Mauritius or whatever, one of those M countries. Yeah. but we also have them in places like Pennsylvania. And we also have them in places like New York. And every time these laws have been used, nobody's using blasphemy law to get rid of these millions of guys marching right now.
Yeah.
The blasphemy laws are used against people like us. And the blasphemy laws have never helped equality. They've never helped civil rights.
Why
limitations of speech have never done the things that people are now saying they can do. And there's no, I've just not seen the mechanism there. So the end of a blasphemy law, yeah, I think is just a genuinely good thing.
Oh, definitely.
Even if that law hadn't been used in the last 50 years, 100 years, it's still wonderful to see people reexamining their ancient things and
absolutely
discarding them.
Yeah. So less good, but funny. How about that?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Kentucky Governor Matt Bevin declared a plan to combat violence in Louisville by tasking faith leaders, public officials, and residents from forming roaming prayer groups for a 10-block high-violence radius in the West End neighborhood. Louisville Mayor Greg Fisher favored resources including housing, education, and healthcare improvements, as well as participation in the Safe and Healthy Neighborhood programs already overseen by the state. Community activists, residents, and even some faith leaders from the city's West End expressed disappointment and skepticism, with one pastor saying that he needed a barf bag due to being sickened by the governor's religious overture that came absent any political actions.
A pastor needs a barf bag because of excessive religious overtones.
That is good. That is good.
So a pastor saying too much prayer.
So, right. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. Yeah, to heck with the prayers. Give me the money to actually fix our infrastructure.
It sounds like this is actually kind of a sad story.
It is a sad story.
It's sad. This is a neighborhood that has had an increased amount of crime, and instead of, you know, stepping up and provide, it seems like it's an impoverished neighborhood that could benefit from a lot of different social programs. And instead of giving them money to curb gun violence before it starts, why don't we just pray?
Yeah.
But who needs education? Who needs good roads? Who needs businesses that are, you know, working and prosperous?
Well, in 2010, you sort of had a political revolution in the United States backed by people in the Tea Party. And it wasn't, the Tea Party is interesting because it had a sort of a libertarian genesis that specifically was non-religious, but then it got co-opted by a fairly nutbag or I guess a more nutbag element. I don't know how do you view it, but And I'm pretty sure this guy is a part of that sort of revolution where they don't want to spend money. They think prayer and stuff like that actually works. And so you've got, can you imagine Rahm Emanuel doing that in Chicago? Can you imagine how that would work out? But instead of doing anything, worthwhile, he's like, let's just pray about it and let's have, you know what this reminds me of? Do you guys remember the Natural Law Party?
No.
Explain this to us.
Right at the end of the 20th century, you know, right around the turn of the century, you had this, the Natural Law Party, which is mostly based out of Maharishi Yogi University in Iowa. And their presidential candidate was this guy named, I think, John Hagelin. And they believed in transcendental meditation.
Oh, no.
Oh.
And so his solution to most of the world's problems was like unilateral disarmament, but drafting a core of yogic flyers who would meditate into places and solve problems with transcendental meditation. This is just a Christian version of that. Yeah.
So they would just like project their mind somewhere and then mediate a problem.
Yogic flyers that they would fly.
Oh, what?
Meditatively fly to places.
I'm sorry.
And
no.
Then mediate an issue and then come back.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Sure.
Yogic flyers
propelled by farts. No. Yeah.
Yogic.
Yeah, and then
flyers.
This guy. So he was a neurosurgeon.
How?
He went to a real school and got a and then
neurosurgeon. So was Ben Carson.
Yeah, there's that. Okay. And then he was worth. Then when the Natural Law Party fell apart, he went to the Reform Party.
Hmm.
And battled against Pat Robertson.
Mm. Oh my.
Anyway,
I was thinking Jello wrestling, but
yeah, not nearly as fun. So some user interactions. How about that?
Sure. All right.
Listener, sorry.
Do you have to
the
say?
The coder
to us,
in me
listeners?
Is suddenly talking. Scott from Tacoma says, "What's your favorite color?"
I like earth tones usually. I love purples. I don't have a favorite color, so sorry.
Pink. It's pink. Has to be pink.
Pink, purple.
Living color.
In living color.
No, not that one.
Damn it.
Color with the U.
Dang it. Dang it. Dang it. Dang it. All right, fine. It was a good show, though.
It was a decent show. Michael from Tacoma writes, can y'all actually prove anything?
Can you actually prove anything?
No.
I was actually asking him.
Oh, I thought you were both asking me, and my answer was no.
No, I mean, I can't either.
Yeah, that's why I'm an atheist.
Meh.
I'm not the one making bold claims here, sir. You should answer that question.
Well, he's not making any claims at all, so...
Except for claiming that we can't prove anything by asking
us about
it.
Well, I mean, the actual wording is, can y'all prove anything? You know, like,
yeah.
I'm guessing that means that we are, like, atheists, and we can prove that there is no God, but he is...
Yeah, you can't put the onus on us to prove a disbelief.
Yep. Nope. So sorry. Yeah. Can you prove these fantastical things?
He's in Tacoma, so you know,
maybe.
Michael, if you wanna, you know, meet up some, you know, you can buy me a shot and tell me why I'm wrong. I'd be in the game for that.
Sure.
Dave from Facebook writes, what differences in approaches to atheism do you think there are between those like myself who never had any belief in God and those who came to atheism after being brought up in a religious belief system? Is there a corollary between harshness of atheism and degree of fundamentalism of religious belief left behind?
I kind of think there really is. A couple of my friends that were raised without religion are much more soft on religion than my friends that were actually, you know, born into a religion. That's something that I've noticed personally.
Yeah, from my personal experience, I tend to agree.
So you guys were religious and
yes.
Came to non-religion.
Former Southern Baptist, me.
Okay. Yeah. So where do you see me on the spectrum?
I mean, you are fairly outspoken. You have a show, Grant,
right.
After all.
Yeah.
I think that you are middle of the ground, but leaning towards more anti-religion than Yeah. Just letting everybody just exist.
One thing I've said is that people leaving religion, it really is a grief process, and the traditional stages of grief that people experience, they will experience when they leave religion, because they're leaving something behind.
For a lot of people, there's a trauma aspect for it as well.
Very much, yes.
So it's getting over a lot of emotional baggage and cognitive relearning, I guess, to try and think.
Get past all of the dissonance
get past
that they
all
had
of the dogma
the
and all of the illogical
compartmentalizing.
Right. Yeah. It's one of the things that we've repeatedly had in interviews on the show is people talking about how they get mad all over again when they go through their lives and they realize that they're following a destructive religious pattern that was programmed into their brains by a belief system that they know is untrue and that they no longer hold. And so that, like, that can create the tragedy all over again and the trauma all over again. Anger, like, it's, you know, part of the reason I was talking about the stages of grief is that anger is a phase. And anger tends to be a big phase for people.
It can last for a long time.
For a very long time. And I think there is there does seem to be a cultural difference between people who were religious and then deconverted and became atheists and those of us who kind of began in an a-religious household. I've considered myself a-religious. My mother was religious. My father is not.
But you also dipped your toes in.
I dipped my toes in again and again because I fell for the God-shaped hole argument.
Yeah.
But the thing is it never really took with me. It was always, it required an effort. And this is one of the cultural differences. Like, it's easy for some people to believe, it seems. It was always difficult. It always took an effort of will on my part to believe in the religious stuff that I was trying to accept.
But like North Korean propaganda, I know that you like to look into things that you don't understand or that you fear.
Right.
So I think that, you know, you've peeked behind the veil, behind the curtains of religion enough that you see that there is a lot of bad out there. There is good out there, too. Mm-hmm. But, you know, in general, it's kind of counterweighted the other way that, you know, it's kind of crappy.
There's stuff in religion that I think we'll hold on to beyond religion. I think we're already doing that. I mean, we've got people going to, you know, Rainier Oasis who are in the room right now, or at least in the building right now. And it's hard for me to describe. I wouldn't describe it as harshness, I guess, is the way as I would go.
Harshness.
Yeah, but there does seem to be a cultural difference between people who were never religious, people who converted, and then perhaps me as a somewhere, like I'm maybe a transitional form of somebody who grew up non-religious, tried religion, and then got out of it. Where you've got me on one side, because it was always difficult for me to believe. And then on the other side of the same spectrum, you have some of the people some of the people who fell into Scientology, for example, who didn't have religion and then really, really, really fell for Scientology. And then even beyond that, you've got people like, dare I say, Kirk Cameron. Although I don't know that I've never really fallen for his I started out as an atheist argument because he was so young.
Yeah.
The growing pains. I was an atheist until 13, and then
No,
it's good marketing, but it may not be logically sensical.
It gives him street cred with the baddie people out there.
Unless you're already like in religion and going to church at 13, or you know about. I don't know. I find that hard to believe.
Well, it's the whole thing that people are not religious. Kids shouldn't be considered Christian until they are, you know, of age and sound mind.
So we got a couple voicemails.
Oh boy,
from people we know.
Ooh.
And there's a common theme. Let's listen to them. This is the first one.
Hey guys, it's Shujin Tribble from Holy Crap the Vlogcast. You went ahead, Sam, and you brought out Kip Winger. You've lost me, Kip Winger. Not because I'm not listening anymore. But because, damn it, I just somewhat died inside laughing so hard. Thanks ever so much. Have a great weekend.
Kip Winger.
Everybody should love that amount of hair.
No. It's not just the amount of hair. It's the amount of hair in a specific configuration. I have never had bangs that high in my entire life.
Really?
I obviously missed something here.
Wait, no. There was the one time where my entire hair was a knot. But that's not bangs. Sure. That's just a rat's nest.
What is this bangs thing?
Hair metal, like butt rock.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Kip Winger. And I've got a podcast from I gotta get you a podcast, Shujin. Anyway, second voicemail.
Hi. In light of the idea that, well, we need to have that plant food in the air to help us grow. And I didn't want to do butter because that felt like that would be really unhealthy. So I bought 632 bags of salad. I put it in my room, and things were working out just fine for a while until it started to mold, and then there's insects and other things started coming in, which, you know, it's just extra protein, but I probably need to see a doctor now. That'd probably be best. Anyway, thanks, guys.
Okay, well, first of all, you need to aerate the salad a little bit. You have to toss it and keep it, fresh and, you know, a little sprayer bottle to mist it down a little bit.
Be sure to toss your salad. 632 bags of salad, I think, is a meme now. that was Jonathan, was it not?
Yes,
yeah,
I
was Jonathan
so.
Ariel. So two podcasters.
All right, yeah,
back to the King Crimson of podcasting. But these are both in reference to your 200th episode.
Hooray!
Yeah,
party noises.
Yeah, we mentioned it. We did it live, but the podcast itself is now up.
Both halves
at atheistnomads.com.
Yes.
And it was a lot of fun.
That was the Atheist Nomads two-parter.
200
minutes. Oh my goodness.
Yeah. It was pretty cool. Sorry you couldn't make it.
Yeah. I feel so bad. Well, it's a milestone.
It is a milestone.
That sounded really lazy of me. I feel so bad. But
we'll get you on 400.
I was glad nobody asked me how many episodes we'd done. Because, well, one, I don't know. I don't count.
Just tell them 666. It's probably not that many.
Well, next year, we didn't do anything for 300. We couldn't. We had too much going on. But we decided we're gonna go big for four.
Oh, boy.
Ooh.
So
a 12, a 24?
A 40.
Gee, you want to kill me, don't you?
No,
I think we're going to do a live event. But we'll before then, everybody wants to do another streamathon.
Get the webcams up.
Because those are fun.
Those are fun. We just need to find an appropriate charity, I think. Not the funniest of episodes, but there's a lot of bad stuff going out there, and I think you got a pretty raw expression of how I'm feeling about it. How about you guys? I got no closing words. Do you guys have any closing words? Just something I can wrap this up with?
Something interesting and fun. They're about to start selling Trump branded toilet paper in Mexico.
Really?
Yes, and it's glorious.
Oh.
Okay, I need that.
That's
everywhere on the net right now.
I don't know that I want anything Trump branded near my
No.
I want to support them and buy a 4-pack.
Okay. Awesome.
I don't have anything.
So we're ending on toilet paper.
Totally.
Definitely.
All right. This is Ask an Atheist. You can go to our website at askanatheist.tv and leave us a voicemail at 253. No, wait, that's the really old one. 844-753-7842. Email us at questions at askanatheist.tv. Twitter us at askanatheistwa. Like I said, kind of a wow week.
It has been indeed.
We'll see you next time.
Not
you could be like
not,
a
not creepy at all.
Sex line operator. Please don't be a sex line operator.
But they make good money.
Yeah. You're a sex line operator. operating through the land.